Thanks very much, Maria. Good morning. Thank you for coming. Some of you will have seen some of this material before, but what I want to do just very briefly is to sort of lay a framework out for us to have the discussions that will follow, and we're going to have you participate with us at some point here. In keeping with this being a long title, so a life course approach, multiple overlapping environments. So here are some of the environments, and of course the environment is a big messy thing, and we have a tradition in science, of course, to take big complex things apart into pieces, which gets us into trouble sometimes, but I've done that here, by thinking about the environment as having a number of components, the physical environment, the biologic environment, the chemical environment, the food environment, and the social environment, all sort of interacting in complex ways and having an impact on the genetic background of individuals and so on, influencing health. And it begins early in life, obviously, and it continues throughout the lifespan. And a couple of things that I want to point out are that, number one, early life exposures to any or influences during vulnerable windows of or windows of vulnerability or windows of susceptibility of child development can actually have lifelong consequences through mechanisms that are beginning to understand. So what goes on early can matter a whole lot to health much later in life. And so we're not only talking about child health here, but we're obviously talking about adult health too. That said, it doesn't mean that what happens to you in midlife doesn't matter either. It all matters right along the whole life course. And here are a few examples just to point out some of the things that we have really good data where if, for example, a woman who is pregnant happens to be exposed to excessive air pollution during pregnancy, she's more likely to give birth to a child of low birth weight who then, with rapid catch-up growth, is more likely to be obese during his or her teenage years in midlife. And midlife obesity, associated diabetes, they themselves are risk factors for cognitive decline and dementia later in life. So Peter Whitehouse is going to be talking to us about brain health and some of the features of that later in life, but we want to keep in mind that early life experiences matter in terms of setting the stage for brain health later in life. There are a number of other examples. I won't go into them. You get the idea that we are really talking about the lifespan, and also we're increasingly interested in the possibility of transgenerational effects, where one, two, and even three generations along can inherit through mechanisms that are beginning to be described, inherit impacts of environmental factors. And throughout, we're also going to want to emphasize that individuals are really members of families, of communities that live in ecological systems. And we're really being reminded of what that's like when if you were here on a kind of a drizzly morning is very different from the ecological system that many people in New York and New Jersey are struggling with and will continue to struggle with for days. And you can imagine what the health impacts of these ecological events are going to have on people's health. And then, of course, we live in a society that makes societal decisions with impacts that reverberate throughout this system. So just to briefly remind us, in the terms of the chemical environment, exposures to hundreds of industrial chemicals that are in commerce, in products, that contaminate air, water, food, that we encounter when we use products and so on, are measurable in people. They are measurable in people both at birth, so we know that prenatal exposures are happening, as well as throughout the life course. This is well documented by studies that are done by the Centers for Disease Control. We know with some certainty that hundreds of diseases or disorders are causally related to some of these chemical exposures. I've given you a link on this slide to a searchable database at the Collaborative on Health and the Environment, and you can go and into that and sort of play with it and search for your favorite chemical or your favorite disease and see what the data are in terms of the links between those exposures to those chemicals and those outcomes. We know that the food environment is terribly important. What people eat matters a lot in terms of the health. And unfortunately, we have an agricultural system and a food system that is promoting unhealthy food to children. Food companies spend billions of dollars every year to try to influence the eating habits of children, and when they get established, they tend to carry those throughout their life, and changing them becomes increasingly difficult. So we have diets now that are so common in the United States that really don't resemble in any way much at all what in an evolutionary time we grew up with, full of refined carbohydrates, unhealthy fats, too few fruits and vegetables, and so on, and they're contributing to many of the diseases and disorders that we are now dealing with in our families and in our healthcare system. Many of the features of the contemporary diet increase the risks of cardiovascular disease, diabetes, various kinds of cancer, cognitive decline, dementia, and so on. Clearly diet-related, and we know that there are interventions, dietary changes, that can actually reduce those risks substantially. Lots of fruits and vegetables, healthy fats rather than unhealthy fats, unrefined whole grains, and cold water fish with more omega-3s and so on. So there are dietary interventions that create dietary patterns that are quite beneficial. We know that the psychosocial environment is terribly important. People of lower socioeconomic status are generally at higher risk for almost all of the major chronic diseases and disorders, with very rare exceptions, probably for a variety of reasons. People of lower socioeconomic status may tend to live more often in communities where they're more likely to be exposed to environmental hazards, have less access to healthy food, and may chronically live in a state of feeling unsafe, where they need to remain hypervigilant. So the exposures are higher, biologically, for reasons that are beginning to be understood, more susceptible to those exposures, and then the third leg of the stool is less capable of responding. So you have sort of a perfect storm of excessive exposures, more biologic susceptibility, and less a capacity to respond. But this also gives us an idea of where we might begin to intervene in this, and we're going to be talking about that in a few minutes. I don't want to spend much time at all on some of the biologic mechanisms, except to say that there is a rich and growing literature that describes how these various environments, both individually and through their interactions, actually get under the skin and influence biologic pathways that that can either increase disease risk or alternatively, depending if they're pointing in the other direction, they can reduce disease risk. So we can think at the same time of risk, we can also think of how building resilience in individuals and communities that is going to promote health rather than disease. And we can put those biologic mechanisms up on a chart and then show how the food environment, the chemical environment, and the psychosocial environment are all driving them in the wrong direction frequently in our communities. And what we're going to be hearing about a bit this morning is how we reverse those, and so we actually promote healthier mechanisms rather than driving the disease-causing mechanisms. So, Maria, I'm going to stop with that.